very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I'm king now. King, 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 king now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am
turn.
Your fingers or your
king doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plans.
I am
he's one,
but girls.
Your fingers or your
tongue.
I am the king. I'm telling mother.
Oh. Welcome back, Game of Thrones. My name's Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. This is the Joffrey Podcast, and here's somebody with me who is like a dirty bedpan. It's Catfish. Catfish, how you doing?
Well, just like that dirty bedpan, you never forget I'm around.
Never.
And you can hit me up, that is Catfish, at CJGman67, only on Twitter. Solely on Twitter. That's the only place you can find me.
All right. Catfish, it has been a long 12 months. It has taken forever for winter to get here, but winter is finally here. We're going to be reviewing, going over Season 7, Episode 1, Dragonstone. We are back in it. We've got 7 wonderful episodes to cover this year. And let's just get to the first one, Dragonstone. What is your rating out of 10?
Well, I'm going to give it 9 what I like to call triple T's.
Triple T's?
Yes, that's what I use when I like to refer to as terrible Tarly tasks.
Oh, man, he did have a tough task. That's really high. One feeling that you could say about the whole show, why so high?
Well, it's just because I'm always high at the beginning of these episodes because they put everybody into motion. So there's a lot going on, especially in this one. So many things going on. We did 7 pregame episodes. In one of them, I predicted we might not even see Samwell. And here we are at the end of the first episode, and Samwell has come up with an answer already all the problems.
He's got most of the time, doesn't he? He does.
He really did. My only problem with this show, you know, Bubba, you and I know it's shocking. Sometimes we talk about the show and we're not recording. I don't know why. Whenever we talk about the show, we should always be recording. And we were talking the other day about how the sex position has dropped off in this show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I don't mind it. But when it's replaced by autopsy position, then I have a little bit of an issue. Autopsy position.
Right.
Instead of sex in the background, to round out a lot of dialogue, we see someone being given an autopsy. To me, that's a bridge too far.
I'm not even sure that's an autopsy. Do they really just weigh the organ?
You know, they're learning things.
They're learning.
There's a seat of learning right there.
Well, okay, so...
And then what about you, Bubba? What did you give it for just an overall rating?
Well, you went to 9 out of 10. That's
I
really
did.
High.
I
and
do.
I was, I would say for maybe the first 20 minutes, I was 10 out of 10. I thought this was cooking. But there was something about the kind of slowdown and the kind of not... I wasn't thrilled by the ending. I know people who wanted Dany to arrive, you know, who've been waiting for her to cross the Narrow Sea all
right.
these seasons. This must be a huge thrill for them. But her just arriving, it wasn't like a great, damn, let's go, like I want these 7 episodes to be. So I'm going to only give this.
Yes.
8 double B's out of 10.
Double B's?
Well, double B's is something I like to use for our preseason, pre-gaming podcast called Book Bitchin'. And this has some, but it's not that. Tonight, it's 8 double B's, stands for Bitchin' Books. There are so many references to the books in this first episode. It's incredible. They are little, too many to mention, nuggets for people who've read those first 5 books in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire saga. There's so many nuggets for book fans that I love. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. So the ending, it did kind of slow down and kind of lose the energy for me, but... Boy, this starts off gangbusters. This starts off at a very high pace, and it's like, giddy up, let's go.
It put everybody in position. We saw all the things that we thought we needed to see. But one thing that I was concerned about, so I want to talk about it up top, is we thought, oh, they're going to have to put Sansa in opposition to Jon to have any kind of conflict in that area, and we know there's going to be some. And while they did that, they also showed that Sansa is not going to be easily fooled. So I think they're going to really work for it. It's not going to be as simple as Littlefinger will be able to suck her into it. She, as she said, she knows what Littlefinger wants. And I think when she says that, she knows that it's not just her body, that he wants power. Like, she knows everything that Littlefinger wants. And I love that. I was so excited about
the
way Sansa comes across. She just didn't – she didn't learn, though, the story of the Godfather.
What's that story?
Don't disagree with family in front of other people.
Hell no.
But, all right. So I won't spoil any more of it.
No. Yeah, we are
I'm super excited.
No, good. We are going to cover this episode in depth. Double L's. Loyal listeners,
oh,
Catfish.
Oh, God, those people, they're still with us, and we love them.
We love them. I just want you guys to know, this here is the Double P Podcast Network, found on Facebook at facebook.com/doublepodcast. That's the word double, the single letter P, the word podcast, plural, facebook.com/doublepodcast. And why am I telling you that? Tonight, Sunday, we are recording this Sunday, July 16th, 2017. We are actually doing three podcasts tonight.
Wow, that's amazing. The dedication. Well, you know, since we are double P's.
Double P's.
Yeah, professional podcasters, you can tell from all the ads that will be interwoven throughout this podcast.
Yeah.
Really, we're not. But we do it for the double L's, like you said.
Yes. And so after this, we're going to be doing our other podcast about Twin Peaks entitled Twin Peaks, The Gifted and the Damned. So please check that out if you haven't already. Plus, we've been covering The Strain. This is going to be the final season of the TV show The Strain.
And
very late tonight, we're going to be covering episode 1 of season 4, the final season of The Strain. So if you're interested in those things or many of the other podcasts we do, please go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/doublepodcast. This year, we have waited so long for season 7.
We have.
That we decided, Double L's, that you deserve a prize. You've stuck with us all this time. If you're new, welcome aboard. We're going to tell you how you can get a prize just for joining in and being new.
Wait a second.
Yeah.
The podcast is free. Yep. They don't have to listen to any ads.
Nope.
But they can win prizes that will also spend money to mail to them?
Yeah. We we're about as smart.
We're givers.
Right.
We're givers. Like all those old maesters who give and give and give to Samwell. Yeah. We're givers.
We are.
But hopefully you'll find what arrives in your mail a little bit more odoriferous than the gifts the maesters leave for Samwell.
So we're going to be giving away one prize, at least one prize, every single episode of Game of Thrones.
Wow.
Through season 7 to you listeners, because you've been so great. If you want to know, tonight we're going to be giving away a Stein and a signed poster from Ramin Djawadi, the composer of the Game of Thrones score, theme song. And we are giving that away. And how do you get eligible to win, you guys, if you haven't done it already? All you have to do is when Catfish and I, when we send out those tweets that say, here's the latest Joffrey of Podcast podcast with the hashtag Joffrey of Podcast, you retweet that, you're eligible to win. That's one entry into our big bowl full of prizes. We also put a notice on our Facebook page. So if you don't use Twitter, if you go to Facebook, facebook.com/doublepodcasts, we're going to put a notice there that says, hey, here's the new latest Joffrey of Podcasts. You share that on Facebook. That can be a second entry. And just to make sure everybody's with us on this crazy journey, you just like the Facebook page, the entire page, not a post. You like the Facebook page. That's a third entry. We're going to be giving away prizes for every single episode up until episode 7, when we're going to be giving away a signed copy of the novel A Game of Thrones, the book that started it all, signed by author George R. R. Martin. Get those entries in. We want you to win. So we're going to do it right at the top. Catfish, reach into the bowl.
Oh, my God. We're doing it right away?
We're doing it right at the top.
This
Let's
is
do
so
it.
Good.
Let's get it.
All right. Okay. And this is going to go to @Leann_R2. That's LYANN_R2.
Woo. Thank you very much, Leann.
So you win. And that, wait. So how do they let us know that they won?
Go to our Facebook page. Give us your mailing address, and we will mail this out to you. Get hyped for season 7, baby! Hell yeah!
Yeah, but also, if it happens that you are one of our Twitter followers, you can also send us a direct message on Twitter.
Oh, that's a great point. Now, we did this because a lot of people have been listening, and they used to enter by giving us iTunes reviews. We kind of, if you gave us one iTunes review, there was like no other way to enter again. So we're not counting iTunes reviews, but we still love them. And we got another great iTunes review that let's read right here at the top before we dive into the episode, Catfish.
Well, let's hear it. This is by The Cold Mailman. And the title is Scaring the Unstraightener Straight.
Heck yeah.
5-star review.
All right.
So this is the only Game of Thrones podcast that preaches the truth about King Joffrey faking his death so he can go about Westeros righting all wrongs without distraction or applause. What's good, he notes that Joffrey doesn't need applause.
No.
Listening to the Joffrey podcast gives me more double Bs.
Double Bs?
Boisterous belly laughs.
Oh, good.
Than thinking about evil Uncle Tyrion trying to reach the top shelf booze at the King's Landing brothel.
Oh, that's pretty good.
This podcast is more satisfying than feasting on lambs or sloths or carp or anchovies or orangutans.
Skip ahead.
Okay. Yes, okay. It is a funny and informative podcast. We're going to have to cut all that, Catfish.
That's what it said at the end.
What a great review that was.
What a wonderful review. If somehow you're new to the Joffrey podcast, what we do is we celebrate what we consider the character who sometimes gets the short shrift, the greatest character in the series, King Joffrey Baratheon, first of his name, first in your heart. And we're not really going to get too much a chance to talk about him too much in this episode, but listeners, just know from time to time we will go into Joffrey mode, and that's kind of the way we separate ourselves among the literal hundreds of Game of Thrones podcasts.
Well, Jack Gleason, the actor who portrays the great character
Joffrey Baratheon,
tweeted out a picture that a fan sent him of Joffrey as the Night King.
Whoa.
And we have been talking about this forever. So
yeah.
I don't know whether Jack Gleason's going to get in trouble for spoiling that he's going to return as the Night King. but just a spoiler alert a little bit for the season. We know King Joffrey is coming back at some point.
Some point.
We are going to try to struggle to cover the rest of the show until His Highness does return, but we will do that for you.
And let me point out, Jack Gleason, because you didn't include hashtag Joffrey a podcast, you're not eligible to win, Jack. Sorry, buddy.
Jack, you can't win a prize.
So, Catfish, we're going to cover this great premiere episode of Season 7.
Let's do it.
By location, and let's start at the location we end the episode at. Let's start at Dragonstone.
Okay.
And the reason why I want to start there is because I did go down to an 8 from, like I said, feeling like a 10
right.
for the first half of the episode. And it just felt anticlimactic almost. So why? Because Cersei at the beginning of the episode, or excuse me, it was actually Jaime said, well, where do you think Daenerys is going to land? He'll probably land at Dragonstone. Stannis has left it abandoned. That's where she was born. Of course, that's where she'll leave. So it ends the episode. Sure enough, that's where she goes. Jaime and Daenerys, mind meld, thinking exactly like. And so let's get to it.
Yeah,
and,
right. If we were going to see some blonde ruler say, shall we begin? We want it to be Joffrey. So there's a little down there.
But also, this is tough. But this show is so great, I feel like I can't be tough. Some of these effects, you could tell they're not really on a boat. You know, this green screen, hey, let's all pretend we're on a boat coming to shore.
I'm on a boat, y'all.
Not that great, but it is pretty much Daenerys' A-team, the three dragons of Drogon. And in the books, you'll know one's named Viserion and one named Rhaegal. But she's with her Hand of the Queen, Tyrion, Spymaster Varys, and Missandei and Grey Worm are in the boat. How do you feel, the Greyjoys feel like, we could get in the boat with the queen? How about us?
Man, I tell
you. How about the sand snakes? We like boats.
Well, even more important.
I row for dawn.
Even more important, the sand snakes are like, that's sand. They
right.
feel like whenever they see sand, they should be able to go in there. They're like eyeing which one of the Unsullied they want to bury up to his neck just to have fun with. They're like, oh, no shore leave this trip.
So, do you like Daenerys? She's got high-heeled boots on, it looks like, giving her some heft, having her stand up.
Right. She's like 5'3" now with those boots on.
Now, I do want to say, once again, I'm so tough on this part, but I didn't feel like the score, and here we're giving away a prize by Ramin Djawadi. The score, I thought, maybe could have helped me feel the emotion of this. Here she is. She's touching her homeland, which she, you know, in the backstory of this show, she got taken away from Dragonstone right after she was born because the Baratheons were coming to kill every Targaryen. So she doesn't even know this. This certainly has to be a huge weight on her, you know, a huge kind of monumental thing in Daenerys' life. But it was kind of subtly played in the score, don't you think?
Well, I'll say this. The score, I completely agree with you once you said it. I'll also say this. The thing is, this doesn't seem so little important to her that in the preview for the on the previously on show, they had to go back to season one to her talking to her brother.
Right.
So that we could get how important this land was to her. She doesn't really talk about – she hasn't really talked about how important it is for her to get back.
Boy, Catfish, you have really just given a great point. If you go back to that very first episode of Game of Thrones all those years ago, it was Viserys. We've got to go home. Viserys was the one who was driven. And if you watch those beginning episodes, Daenerys never felt crazy about it. Now, later in season one, she was kind of whispering and called Drogo's ear, shouldn't we do this? But, yeah, I don't know. That's
interesting.
It hasn't
been on the agenda in the last few years, so it doesn't seem to be as powerful homecoming as it could have been.
It could have been. Now, this is a beautiful location. Dragonstone in the past, obviously the interior sets are there at where they film in Belfast, Northern Ireland. But the beach, it also used to be in, they'd film that in Northern Ireland too. But this was a beach they did in Spain, and it's really lovely. And they've expanded Dragonstone. When it was just Stannis, it was pretty much just the room with the big painted table, the carved table to look like Westeros. And they would give Stannis other areas like bedrooms and stuff. But for Daenerys, now that she's there, they've built this incredible throne room. Nice, huh?
Now, I really feel like, I know that Stannis was grumbly and you didn't want to cross him.
No.
And there's not a lot of people who have ships. But I'm really surprised there's no squatters on this island when they show up. I mean, it's a great location
that
if you
want
to get away from the
war. I think that would have been great.
People were vacationing on the beach. They had a picnic laid out.
No, I think it would have been great. They come in and you just see this family eating at the table. Are you Stannis? Are you Mrs. Stannis? Sorry, we were just, you know, it's getting cold. We thought we saw the place empty.
Somebody hired us to clean the place.
Yeah, Stannis left nobody behind. That's kind of, when you leave a castle behind, you really leave it behind. Now, of course, in the books, Stannis actually did leave a company there, but we are so past the books. Who's to say that if and when Daenerys lands on Dragonstone in the books, if there'll be anybody there? So she comes. Stannis kind of left it in a dump. Maybe some of the wind blew over these candelabras.
Yeah, it would have been much cleaner if they'd have just left some people. If there were squatters there, they would have cleaned up.
Now, Catfish, here we're watching Team Daenerys again. She goes to the room with the painted table. That's what they call this carved table. She goes in there with Tyrion.
Only Tyrion, and even Missandei is like, no, Grey Worm. That's not your business.
Right. Well, I'm glad you point that out because you would assume she has closer bonds with Missandei. She's been with her since season three. But
honestly, it made me think when they went in, like, I thought more about, yeah, hell yeah, like, this is serious. You know, Tyrion is her hand and he will go with her everywhere.
Right, okay, that's a good call.
He's above everybody else, even though they were with her earlier.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful, pretty crazy. But I just want to talk to you. How do you feel about Team Daenerys? Do you want Team Daenerys to win? Do you want Daenerys to be, okay, this is it. This is the posse we're going to take her over. Do you want her to take over, or are you rooting for somebody else?
Honestly, it seems like such a fait accompli that she'll be there at the end that I've never thought about whether I want her to take over or not. I've talked over and over again about how tough the dragons are and makes her seem overpowered. I've read some stuff in the last week saying, well, how could they take those dragons down? And some of them saying, well, you know, the inclement weather would make it very hard for the dragons to fly.
Sure.
Some things like that. But honestly, I don't see her going away anytime soon, so I've never thought about whether I want her to. I've never been a big fan of her. She took years to learn lessons that I'm still not sure she's learned. So I'm not a huge fan of her character in the television show.
Okay. All right.
Now, what about you?
I'm the exact same way. Well, one of the things, this goes to my prediction for the series, book series, and television series as a whole, is I've never thought anybody was ever going to, you know, there'll be one person on the throne at the end. I've always kind of thought the Iron Throne will be pointless. It'll be gone. It'll be, I'm not sure it'll be a democracy. Maybe it'll be like all our heroes are kind of done with it, and then a new group come up and start squabbling it over. Daenerys in season two had that vision of the throne room destroyed. That's how I kind of imagine the throne room being if and when she ever gets to King's Landing. So,
and I've thought the complete opposite, and that is the entire world is going to be united because Song of Ice and Fire, it's going to be Jon Snow and Daenerys ruling together.
All right. So listeners, what do you think? Go to our Facebook page. Let us know who's right. Bubba, Catfish, or are you right, which is probably the real right group. If you're right, you tell us that you're right.
Tell us that you're right, but don't just say, I'm right.
Yeah, explain why you're right.
Tell us why you're right, because you can always say that at the end. I told you I was right, but you never told us.
Well, that is factually correct. You did tell us you were right. All right, Catfish, now let's go to the Riverlands part of the story, and we're going to follow up on Arya Stark. And when I say I wanted to go 10 out of 10, I actually thought Arya's killing of Walder Frey last season, I didn't quite enjoy it so much. But this cold open, meaning there's a scene before the even opening credits, this was great.
It starts off so good. And something that happens here that continues throughout the show is a lot of humor.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just even the fact that Walder Frey is enjoying himself in a way we've never seen him enjoy himself. He's a lot more friendlier than he used to be. And then the turn is amazing. It's just beautifully done. Of course, we all know. We knew. This is not a flashback. This is Arya's taken over as Walder Frey. And I thought this scene was just beautifully done.
Right. So we knew Arya could change faces. We now find out for sure, if you didn't know before, that she can apparently change voices as well.
And
so
body.
This is very magic.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Plus, my favorite bit is she could change a face. She can change a voice. But, Catfish, what you just said a second ago, she can't change everybody's attitude about Walder Frey. So he had to come up and say, yeah, we just had a feast. Why are we having two feasts in a row? This isn't normal.
You guys deserve it. I'm giving you the good wine tonight. All things that should have clued these people in. I don't care if it looks, sounds, or
right.
Like Walder Frey. Definitely not acting like Walder Frey.
Now, did you like Arya literally ruining the fall of House Frey? Did you like this? Because I loved it. I thought this was more enjoyable, more fun than the Frey pie and the slit throat from last season.
Because she got to monologue.
Oh yeah,
monologue them while they were dying. And the funny bit is, she gets one last, even though they've already drank, she gets one last Walder Frey in his Freyism in. No, you're a girl. You're not allowed to drink.
But
really,
okay,
she's saving the girl,
right? But okay, so that's an interesting point. Why does she save this girl? Because is she doing a bit like Jon Snow? Later on, Jon Snow and Sansa have that fight, and Jon Snow says, "Like I'm gonna swing the sword. I'm gonna punish the people who did it. But if these kids, you know, I'm not gonna punish somebody for their brother's treason." Is that why she saves this Walder Frey's latest wife? Why do you think she saves this woman? This girl wife, this child bride.
Right. I mean, I think she's seen enough. She hasn't seen as much as Sansa has as far as the way women are treated. But I think she's seen enough to know that in this world, you really have to have direct evidence on a woman to prove that she's not a full-on 100% victim in this world. But when we get to that conversation, this is a deep conversation we have about leadership and how you rally people to your cause, whether you go scorched earth or not. But so we can talk about that when we get to Sansa and
Jon. Yeah, no, well, good point. Let's stay with Arya's journey here, because as Walder Frey, I just love this monologue that you just mentioned ago. You know, he's listing all their deeds. He's like, hey, okay, yeah, you slit the throat of a mom of five. You stabbed a pregnant woman in the belly. You killed everybody after you welcomed them into your house.
The only thing that I didn't find realistic, and it probably would have been too jarring, Honestly, I think every time he did that, they should have been like, yeah! I mean, that's the kind of attitude that he's engendered among them. Like, you should be proud of these horrible things. That's why you're my guys.
Right. And the wife, Walder Frey's wife, she's listening to this and she's like, yeah, this is a bit awkward. Awkward. But then Arya, when she does her mic drop, when she does her goblet drop as they drop dead, I love it. You left a Stark alive. Should have ripped them out root and stem.
So good.
Oh, man. So she does the goblet drop, and then when she marches through the hallway here at the Twins, I thought this was incredible. I'll have to be honest. I wanted her to have Edmure released from the dungeons and say, Edmure, come with me. We've got to talk to my sons who are now in control of Riverrun. You know, to be like, oh, there's going to be some Freys at Riverrun we need to take care of.
Well, she's got, let's face it, the Starks have all learned to sort of fight in a different way.
Oh yeah,
right. John is going to fight with a group of people. Sansa's going to try to use her wiles because that's what she has, and she has great ones. And Arya is just going to take people down one by one using her guile instead of, you know, she's going to be like a ghost going through the kingdom.
Oh, hell to the yeah. She says, winter has come for House Frey. Youch, that is tough. That is really, really tough. But I like this. You know, we had so many times we're talking about, oh, should we be worried about Arya? Should we be worried about Arya turning completely evil and becoming the villain that she's theoretically fighting against? But this boss-ass action, I loved it, even though in some ways, how is it different from what Cersei did? How is it different from what Sansa pitches later? Hey, kill everybody.
Well, it's because she's paying, unlike Cersei, who said, let's use a wildfire that will kill these, you know, 10 specific people I want to kill, but will also kill 3,000 more, right?
Right.
And Arya's going to kill just the people who are responsible. And this whole thing about only killing the people that are responsible comes up and is reinforced by Arya's next scene, which great. Which
did
is
you,
something
did,
that we don't get to see very often in this world and is so good. A bunch of just normal guys who, although they have fealty towards Cersei, are not horrible people. I mean, pretty much everyone we've met so far, you know, Qyburn, the people who are in League, it's just like evil and nefarious. These are just people. They've got families. One guy is hoping to have, and I thought that was a beautiful piece of dialogue when he said, I'm hoping to have a daughter because they take care of you when you're older.
Right.
And they don't get sent off to war. And the look on Arya's face when he said the daughter takes care of the father, you could read a lot into that about how she feels like she could have maybe saved Ned. Or at least seeing him die.
Oh, yeah.
There was so much in that scene. It was so beautiful. And we get to see so little of, like, just normal people not really embroiled in this.
Sorry, Catfish. I want to get to it, though. When you saw her coming up to, obviously, Lannister soldiers.
Right.
Did you want her to kill him? Did you think she would kill him? Or were you like me? You just wanted them to die because of Ed Sheeran.
You stole my joke. I just wanted her to kill Ed Sheeran.
Right, kill him. Right, please put us out of his misery. And so
one of you clearly deserves to die.
Right, that'd be great. She go, I'm going to kill the queen. Now, Lannister soldiers, I should kill all of you, but really, just this one, just you here.
Now, I don't know. I'm not sure that her original intent was even to kill these guys, even when she found out.
Right, she might have ridden by them.
Yeah, and even when she found out, I mean, obviously she probably knew who they were. I don't think it was in her intent to kill them. Plus, that would be a little bit difficult from what we've learned about how she kills people.
Right.
You know, I mean, she could become Ed Sheeran, and then she'd have to commit suicide. But she learns that people are people. She's learning now.
Right. Well, Catfish, let's get to the final bit, I think, about Arya. She says she's headed to King's Landing. Why isn't she headed north? Has she not heard? It feels like there's obviously been some time that has passed. based on some of the things. You know, Sam got a montage showing how long he had been in Old Town at the Citadel. The Brienne had made it back to Winterfell. It felt like time had passed, but she is still going to King's Landing. That means she's going for names on her list, like Queen Cersei and Frank and Gregor the Mount.
There's another possibility, and I don't know whether I'm actually not trying to make a joke here, but it may sound like it. In this scene specifically, the guy says, I don't know what child I've had because we're normal people and we don't get ravens. Now, we know that all the big people in this world, all the important people learn from ravens.
Right.
You know, Cersei hears about Daenerys. A raven goes to Jon Snow and essentially saying, I'm Cersei here. It's almost like, I'm Cersei, come get me if you want, punk.
Love it.
So it's possible she hasn't heard. I would think in this world, if you're not connected, all you hear is rumors that you're not sure about. That seems a little kind of a flimsy answer. I believe it's more your thing. Hey, look, I've got a job to do regardless of whatever. I mean, if she joined Jon, what is she going to do? She's not going to be on the battlefield. She probably thinks, who cares?
What if – how much money would you give me
if
season 7,
yes,
the cliffhanger is the Night King – removes his face and it's Arya. Arya goes deep undercover to get the Night King.
That would be great if I didn't already know that Joffrey was pretending to be the Night King.
Oh, okay. All right. So, staying in the Riverlands, we spent an awful lot of time with the Hound and Beric Dondarrion and Thoros of Myr. This kind of shocked me. I did love this kind of moment towards it. And I gave my rating, I called it, you know, bitchin' book stuff. So, bitchin' book stuff. I'll cut to the end of this section. In the fourth book, they don't say the Hound is still alive. Remember at the end of season 4, everybody thought the Hound was dead. Arya had left him to die.
Right.
In the fourth book, though, you have this character who you think might be the Hound being seen by people who don't know what the Hound looks like and is kind of far away. They know it's a big guy in the distance, but what is the big guy in the distance doing? Digging graves. And they call him the grave digger in the fourth book. And this wonderful section, which I don't know if it forgives the mountain. I'm sorry, forgives the Hound for what he did. Sandor Clegane, the Hound. He stole these people's money. Maybe with that money, they could have bought food. They could have gone and stayed at an inn. I don't know. But the fact that the Hound buried these people that he robbed in season 4, I thought it was a great little circle that we're coming to.
It is a great little circle. For me, I thought we spent more time with him than he deserved.
Ooh. Ooh, tough. Now, is it just him, or is it because the Hound, normally when we saw the Hound prior to his turning out to be alive, we saw him with other characters we really liked. We saw him with Arya. We saw him with Sansa. We saw him in King's Landing. Here we're seeing him with these season 3 characters and, you know, the one episode they were in season 6. We honestly don't know Beric Dondarrion too well. We don't know Thoros of Myr too well. So is that why you're kind of – you felt that, or what do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, honestly, I think that – you know, when we talk about when we used to watch Deadwood.
Right.
And Ian McShane, who was on Deadwood, when he used to say the M word or the – see sucker word.
Right.
It was like poetry coming from his mouth.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about the shorter C word when the Hound says it.
Oh,
it sounds like music coming out of his mouth. So I did enjoy it every time he used it. You know, it's beautiful. It's just that.
Now, some people are going to think about the Hound's first appearance of episode 1 of season 4. They're going to say, is catfish C word mean chickens? I'm going to eat every chicken here and there. No, no, no. You don't mean chicken.
It's not. If you watch this episode, you know what the Hound's new favorite word is. And it starts with C, and it rhymes with hunt.
Right.
So it wasn't that. I do enjoy his performance. I just feel like when we're going through, I understand why we spent so much time with Samwell, because at the end he found the dragon glass, which I thought, oh my God, are we going to spend so much time with Samwell and it's going to be like 3 episodes before he finds anything? So even though he did, and I was like, oh, that's a little quick, at least it made sense for all the time we spent with him. I just don't feel like we got so much for all the time we spent with the Hound.
Well, the Hound, because he dug these graves for these people he screwed over, once again, I think he is on his quote-unquote road of redemption. I think
absolutely
I think
agree.
The fact what he saw in the fire points to the East Watch by the Sea castle on the wall, and the fact that it seems to be pointing this group there. In the Jon Snow scene, we heard Tormund being pointed there. So I almost feel like, because this is a shorter season, normally you would kind of have these little signposts that all were going to end up at East Watch by the Sea, but because there are only seven episodes, it's like, Tormund, Tormund, you want me to guard East Watch by the Sea? I will. The Hound sees East Watch by the Sea in the flames. And so it's like, okay, that's where we're going. It's kind of like the quick way so that you know where they're going. When we left them in season six, they were going, we're going north, we're going north. Now this gives them a destination. We know who they might run into. I consider it like a simpling of the plot. Like, okay, let's go there.
I guess it seems unfair for me to say I enjoyed so much what it said about the world for that scene with Arya and the Lannister soldiers, but to not enjoy so much the sort of philosophical discussion he has with Beric about, you know, why are you here? I don't know why I'm here. What did I do to deserve this?
Yeah, they're better men than you. Why you keep coming back?
I mean, honestly, even though he's a rough-hewn guy, it's like poetry. It's like the Hound. The Hound is like a philosopher poet.
Only if every word rhymes with Hunt.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. So, Catfish, where do you want to go next? Do you want to go down to Old Town, the new city we have, or do you want to go to, north and Winterfell, where there's some really crazy, great stuff happening?
No. Let's knock out Old Town, because unlike all the things that are going on in the north, which could send us in several different directions, it feels like there's only one thing happening at Old Town. So let's knock that out first.
And as we knock it out, I'm a big,
so to speak,
I'm a big nerd about this.
Yes.
As we knock down Old Town, as we journey as far south as south goes in some ways in the Seven Kingdoms, all of season six, we didn't have any new places on the map, and I considered it very frustrating. I was like, why are they not giving – you know, they never gave us Volantis on the opening credits map. I was like, where's all our stuff? Where's all our stuff? So look at it, Catfish. We have a new location on the map. There it is, Old Town, which is part of the Reach, which is technically controlled by House Tyrell. But the Tyrells are in tough shape. So what do you think of this? I loved this. There's the high tower there in Old Town. I love this new location. I hope we get a bunch more.
Yeah, well, hopefully we will get some new locations. I don't know how much time now we need to spend at Old Town now that we've learned the most important. Well, we learned two important things. One, being an apprentice maester sucks so hard. It really sucks hard what you have to do. That was a funny, even though I was almost gagging, it was a funny bit to kind of repeat that over and over again,
over
everything
and
that
over.
He has to do.
Well, what I was saying, Catfish, is I don't know if you were ever in a fraternity, but we're seeing Sam as the Pledge. Pledge. This is Flounder. Flounder here at House at House Citadel. He is really being stuck through, you know, the worst. I can't believe, you know, you're supposed to go to class, but instead you're pretty much a librarian putting the books away. You're a cleaning wench. They can't get anybody to do this. They can't hire people out. Let's outsource this.
You take care of everything that goes in and everything that comes out. That's pretty much your job.
Oh, these bedpans. Oh, Sam, what is going on?
It sort of feels like, again, this is sort of, I thought we were maybe not going to see Sam this much. I don't know how much we'll see him this season, but they really sped through. It was like,
well, they gave us a montage. Yeah, to let us know time has passed, everything's good. But they also, here we go, another bitchin' book hint in that fourth book. We find out, or we're kind of clues to that point you to think, ooh, there is some precious stuff under lock and key in the Citadel. Through other things in the books, I guess I don't want to go too deep into it to spoil the books, there's a thought that a faceless man, in fact, the book, Jaqen H'ghar, there's a thought that he is in Old Town searching for a book. And here Samwell sees a absolutely locked away book session. Incredible.
Now, quick, this is my issue with this, and it's just sort of the same in the book. If no one really believes in this, if it's ridiculous.
Why do you lock it up?
Why do you lock it up? It should be in with the fantasy stuff. You only lock up something if you're afraid of the secrets that it contains. So that's, I think, maybe a slight misstep.
Any thoughts on one of a big-name actor with a brand-new role, Jim Broadbent, as I believe he's Maester Wayland, who CSI Old Town.
Autopsy-sition.
Any thought about this Jim Broadbent, famous actor? Hell, he was a professor in the Harry Potter films, and now he's made it to Westeros.
Again, we had Ian McShane for one bright, shining episode. Amazing, from being from leading everyone to just being dead on the ground. I thought it was cool.
Well, I got a bit confused about what Maester Wayland, what his true message was. Was his message saying, Sam, everybody thinks everything's the end of the world. We keep on living. You think these White Walkers are the end of the world.
Right. He says when there was a huge fight, we kept on being here. This is just, I want to say this, the people in academia, they don't think the real world touches them. They're like, whatever, these people fight. And it's proven true so far. People, kings fight and the Maesters still survive, but he doesn't seem to realize the magnitude of the White Walkers. On the other hand, he seems to agree through pure logic, by the way.
Yeah.
Pure logic.
Yeah, and I like this logic. Gosh,
you know what? There's no reason for you to make it up.
Right.
And different sources have reported the same thing. So, yep, it's true, but don't worry about that. Also, write down the number for the Way to the Heart, because I didn't.
I'm going to ask you what it is, and I'll just close the damn book.
He's like Miyagi. I will ask you at dinner the Weight of the Heart.
So I don't know what to think about Maester Wayland. I love that he doesn't say, you lying pledge. Hey, pledge,
but
give me 20, pledge.
He doesn't
seem
to help him, and he also doesn't seem to say, maybe you should. It's not like he gives Sam the idea that he should just steal these keys.
No. Sam gets up to trouble. For somebody who didn't have, in season one, he didn't have any courage. And now he's stealing it. Sam, how many years in prison is he going to suffer? He stole his dad's sword. He steals keys, entering restricted access areas, stealing books.
Yeah, I was surprised he took them.
Sam is the book thief.
Well, he's going to stay up all night and then return the key, turn the books and then return the keys in the morning, I guess.
I guess, yeah.
And that's what he's going to have to do.
Yeah, this is very odd and kind of lacks security, actually, at the Citadel. If these books are so precious that even Sam, well, I thought he was going to steal the key and try to read it there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. Or at least maybe Gilly knows how to reproduce keys. That would be the best way to do it. Melt some wax and have somebody else make a key. And then you can go in whenever you want.
But
better light where he is.
Right. I actually thought that place that he was staying with Gilly and Baby Sam, I thought, boy, that looks like a nice place. That should be on Old Town House Hunters. How are they affording this? Are those the dorms in Old Town? How is a woman allowed to stay in the dorm with a baby? Like, what's going on? Yeah, are they renting rooms? And he goes, I'll pay for it with my dad's sword.
Again, you can cut this out. I could be completely wrong.
Sure.
I seem to remember saying that they said, as a training maester, they give you a weekly stipend. Didn't the guy give him a weekly stipend or tell him he could come back for his weekly stipend?
I don't know if he did that on the show. I don't think he said that on the show.
I think I remember that.
All right. So
just leave it in, and then you can mock me if I'm wrong.
Listeners, mock us on our Facebook
page. Yeah, mock me. It's one of two things. Either I'm completely wrong or Bubba was wrong. And so this might be my chance at redemption, but more likely it's my chance for more shame. Wait, give me the bell. Okay, I'm ready to take it, even if I'm right.
Shame. Now, eagle-eye viewers will note that as Sam is flipping through one of these books, he stops on a page which looks like this dagger is on it. And people with eagle eyes will know, wait a minute, how do I know that dagger? Theoretically, because it looks identical, this is a dagger that the assassin used in season one, episode two, to try to kill Bran while Bran was in his coma. This is the knife Now let's try to track it. Okay, so this assassin had it, tried to kill Bran. Bran's direwolf kills the assassin. Okay, Cat Stark brings the knife down to Ned in King's Landing. Theoretically, Ned had it last, but now here we see it, a drawing of it, in a book that's locked in Old Town. This is crazy. This could be something. This could be just a fun Easter egg for us viewers, but all I'll say is people who looked at the Stark covers of Entertainment Weekly and some of the Stark pictures, it looked like a certain character was holding this dagger.
Ooh.
That could be too much of a spoiler. I don't know. Boy.
There's another lesson for close viewers here.
What's that?
And that is, if you're trying to learn some old wisdom,
yeah,
just skim the books.
Right, skim. Don't bother to read. Look at Sam's like,
I thought he was reading, but then as he's going through, he just skims through the three pages, and then voila.
Right, Sam's like I am with some books. I'm just going to look at pictures.
Exactly, exactly.
So he comes to a map.
That's what he says. You know, some people read Playboy for the articles. Sam reads old tomes for the pictures.
Sam, this is a bit silly. Stannis did in season five tell, Stannis did in season five tell Sam that, yeah, Dragonstone, we got a lot of dragonglass on Dragonstone. And so here it is.
So why didn't Samwell believe him?
No, he needed to see it in a book to believe it.
Okay.
To believe it, he had to see it in a book. And so we see that this cave is off to the one side. It's not part of the castle. This cave, which is a mountain of dragonglass, I believe it is right there. The Valyrians were just using dragonglass to decorate their swords. You begin to wonder, is this how Valyrian steel got its property? Does the steel have some dragonglass in it?
So maybe there still are squatters on Dragonstone, but they just found this fabulous cave,
right,
decorated in dragonglass. So this is beautiful right here.
Okay, and then the final bit. Sam is feeding what we assume are patients too sick and been quarantined off. And he has one who seems to be very interested in Daenerys Stormborn.
That's because Sir Friendzone never gives up and never says...
I know.
He'll say die, but he'll never give up.
Sir Jorah. Ouch.
That just... But I don't know whether... How much more we're going to get out of Sir Jorah, but that was one of the at least two direct segues that were in this show.
You mean where he says, where is the queen? Where is the queen? Has she arrived yet? And of course, we cut to her arriving. Yeah, so maybe Sir Jorah... It was doing his own version of Skip Ahead.
Right, and then earlier on, Sansa says something about Cersei, and then boom, Cersei. Right.
I've learned a lot from this character called... Wait, don't cut yet. I want more scenes. I want more lines. So after the opening credits, we should talk about this briefly.
Mm-hmm.
We see the Army of the Dead, the Night King. He's bringing the storm with him, as Jon Snow likes to say. He's bringing the storm with him.
Whew. And he has got some White Walker giants now, and they look scary. But are you afraid was going to show up?
I was so afraid that in this incredible marching army of White Walkers and the dead and the whites, I thought, oh, my God, are we going to see Hodor? Please don't let us see Hodor.
That would have been
amazing. I thought
amazing.
We were going to see Hodor, and I was like, please, Hodor, please.
Hodor did not even sharp enough to get recruited by the White Walkers. They passed on him.
Well, he could be in there somewhere. Come on. Throw him a ball. But yeah, they have multiple giants. Whoa. And so we saw Mira Reed. Everybody says Gendry got strong. Mira Reed dragged Bran all across the friggin' north.
Thanks a lot, Benjen.
I know, Benjen. Just don't drop us anywhere near the wall. I love that Night's Watch Ed is like, why should I believe you guys claiming you are who you say you are? And then Bran apparently went through Ed's browser history and went...
Right, exactly. It's so great. So two things. Number one, he still didn't answer the question.
Right.
But number two, scary. Bran Stark knows all your secrets.
Right.
You were I thought he was going to say, you lost your virginity at 14.
Right, okay, I believe you. No more.
It was your aunt. No, stop!
No. But
now this is great because
it is great.
Boom, we got Bran with knowledge.
Oh yeah.
About I don't know how long they can keep him away from Jon Snow. I'm sure they'll come up with something. But once he gets to Jon Snow, he's got some information that that will potentially also might come at an important point if Jon Snow and Sansa get into conflict.
Hold on. Here's going to be the scene. Mm-hmm. Bran, you're alive. You made it back. Bran, do you have something to tell me? I do, Brother Jon. But first, let me tell you about Ed. Do you know that he's really into these kinky sex acts with... Wait, no. Bran reading his browser history. Brand's how shameful.
Oh, John, I see you know things now.
Bran's... He's like, John, you were in the cave with Ygritte and you started to... Okay, that's enough. Bran, brothers shouldn't be so close. Well, we're not brothers. We still shouldn't be that close. If you have an idea of what the most disturbing thing Bran has seen in all his vision, listeners, go to our Facebook page or tweet it out to us, hashtag Joffrey a podcast. Now, we want to hear it.
There is some, I don't know whether it's fan service or all of a sudden they realized last year after they cast this actress, they're like, we have got to bring some more badass of Triple L.
Triple L?
Yeah. Little Lady Lyanna.
Oh, Lyanna Mormont.
She fucking brought it hard.
Why, lady. Oh, but you know what? Let's get to Lyanna Mormont's thing. First and foremost, women fighters. Do you agree that Jon Snow's idea, King Jon Snow's idea, we need women fighting too? Or do you think it's tough enough? The thing I wonder about, women fighter. I'll interrupt myself. Women fighter, yay or nay? Yes or no?
I kind of see where you're going. I feel like John would be a little bit more gun-shy about changing doing a whole paradigm shift after the last time he tried a paradigm shift about the way people should think about a certain group of people. He got the crap knifed out of him.
Yeah, he's
like, hey, how about the Wallings? We'll bring them on. Huh? Good idea. Ah, no, not a good idea. Hey, all right, let's have women fight.
Right. Wait a minute, is that a sign that little lady Lyanna at a certain point will Ollie Jon Snow? Give him the Ollie treatment. Well, okay, why I'm saying this.
I agree. It's a big thing. You're just getting everybody together. They just all bent their knee. And you have got, you're a bastard.
Yep.
Okay. You've got, sitting right next to you is the true born child of Ned Stark. And now you're going to come up with these crazy ideas. I think he's trying to tell them how horrible it is. It's still. They believe him more than I think they would even believe him. You know.
Yeah, I kind of wonder about that because so many of these northern lords, they haven't seen the White Walkers. They haven't seen the army of the dead.
We're right next to the wall. We haven't heard anything.
Right. You want us? Right. If there were some crazy dead parties going on over next door, we'd know.
Lord Snow, I've heard nary a peep from over the wall. Are you sure?
All right, so let's put aside double W's.
Double W's?
Women warriors. For
yeah.
A bit. And let's instead get to the true argument that came between Sansa Stark, now wearing a wig, which I just couldn't help always noticing, and Jon Snow. Should they have rewarded the people who fought for him? I kind of think maybe they should have. Sansa had a good point here. I don't know.
Sansa did have a good point, and I thought I was convinced by her point, and then I heard him, and then I was convinced by his point.
So it's always the last point you hear. Okay, so let me make a point, and then you'll like me.
When we do our mock trial on our Ash vs. Evil Dead, I'll have to go last, just to have the last. Well, and this is the big kind of discussion I wanted to have, because
let's have it.
It makes sense, on one hand, to say, these people were with us, so let's have them take over the castles. On the other hand, this is what's been going on in this world forever and ever and ever. Mm-hmm. You reward the victors, then you have people after they've been put down, then they come back and arise to avenge what's going on. So to say to these people, look, we're all together. Some people made mistakes, but we're not going to punish you. So then you have the healing. And then you come together. This, to me, is even more revolutionary than the double W's.
The double W?
The women warriors.
Okay, that's – okay. I don't know. I think, you know, he should have called those two kids up. He's like, okay, Alice Carr Stark, Ned Boy, that's a big name, huh? Ned Umber, little Ned Umber. You two come up here. Because your family's betrayed us, chop and block. Davos, get me the chop.
How about you say, all right, well, look, you two kids come up here. All right. One of you gets to keep the castle.
Fight to the death, right? The men need entertainment.
You know what? And I don't know whether they told her to do it or not, but it was a little over the top. If you notice the girl's reaction after she gets spared, she's like, whew.
Right. Yeah, she draws that sword. I'm pledging.
She does got a little smile. Hey, yes, thank you, please.
Now is Davos? Davos is seated at the head table. We have Jon, we have Sansa. I think those make sense. But Davos, I don't think he has any lines in this episode. Does that mean he's hand to the king? Is he, because he like, you bring me back from dead, you get to be hand to the king? That's
good.
Well,
who else would be his hand to the king? As we've seen, people kind of, they pick people who are warriors,
right,
who know more than them. And
oh boy,
for John, that's everybody. But Davos is the oldest one. Sir Knuckles,
right?
Who else could it be? He's not going to pick Tormund. But first of all, Tormund's getting sent off. Second of all, he's a wildling. That would be worse than the women warriors and not killing people who betray you. Who else could it be? He's not going to nominate Sansa.
Boy, I think she actually gives a lot of good advice, though, at times.
She gives great advice. And the fact that I was worried that they were going to do something simple to put them in conflict, the fact that Sansa kind of sees what's going on but is still supportive is good. Although, again, they do a little bit. Jon gives her a dig when they get into the conversation.
Oh, yeah.
And then she kind of brings it back together, and then he gives her another dig at the end, like, so then I should listen to you? So he's got to be a little careful. That was not cool at all. Yeah. Now, Sansa admits something very important, right? Because he says, do you think I'm Joffrey? And she says, no, you're the opposite of Joffrey, admitting
you need a lot of help.
That Jon Snow is weak.
He needs a lot of help.
Yeah. And then she also says she admires Cersei. Why does she admire Cersei? Because Cersei's the mother of Joffrey. So Sansa is very smart. Double S.
Double S.
Smart Sansa.
We've always said it.
She realizes how awesome Joffrey is and how Cersei deserves respect because she's Joffrey's mother.
Yeah, but Jon should listen to her at times. There's got to be a happy medium
in
all this. When she starts saying stuff like, you need to be smarter than Dad, you need to be smarter than Rob. Whoa.
They sort of pull him in two directions here, right? In one way, he's like, look, we need everybody, so we're going to have the women fight. But then Sansa, I guess it's understandable. He hasn't seen her in a while. He doesn't know what she knows. But it feels like he should at least listen to her. And she is smart.
Oh, she is.
She's so smart. As I said before, she knows exactly what Littlefinger wants.
Oh,
and
yeah,
she shuts Littlefinger down so
beautifully.
Good. Oh my god.
These Stark sisters know how to drop mics, man. They know how to in your face it so much. And so what should you do here? Sansa, I think, is giving Jon good advice again about the message they get from Cersei. She's like, okay, Cersei kills people who don't like her. I'm thinking, couldn't you maybe sent Davos down there as an emissary and say, listen, we don't have any trouble. We don't kill us. You know,
well,
you got to appease Cersei, you would assume.
That's the thing, is that honestly, it feels to me like Sansa would be smart enough. I don't know if we'll ever get to see this scene, right? This all could be easily resolved if Sansa goes to Davos and says, listen, and fills him in.
Oh, that's a good call. That is a really good call.
Might be too easy. They might not write it because I think that they still want a conflict between Sansa and Jon. But she'd be smart enough to go to Davos and lay it out, and then Davos has his ear. But Jon definitely, I mean, I am counting Jon's successes on one hand, and I've still got some fingers left. So he should not think that he knows all the answers.
He shouldn't think that at all. But now Catfish.
Yeah.
Another little book thing that really got me scared.
What do you get scared of?
Is that is Sansa says, you know, anybody who Cersei thinks is an enemy, she's murdered. In the books, so this is a slight book spoiler.
Okay.
Cersei sends...
In other words, it's BS.
Well, you know what I mean. Cersei sends somebody to the wall to kill Jon Snow. Now, of course, we never find out what happens to that person she sent to the wall because, number one, Martin hasn't finished writing the books, but number two, Jon got murdered by somebody else in the meantime. But what if Cersei sends another assassin? Oh, my goodness gracious.
Speaking of that, where's our other redheaded vixen right now?
Melisandre.
Not to be seen in this episode.
Oh, wait. No, no, there's our redheaded vixen. Oh. Tormund. He is coming up. Let me tell you something, guys. To approach a woman, you have to project confidence. Everybody likes confidence. And he has got it, man.
Tormund,
you've heard of the popped collar. He's got the popped fur collar and the popped eyebrow.
But
he's rocking
that,
it.
What's great is it looks like he's a little actually jealous of Pod because I think he maybe gets off on his ladies beating him in single combat they get under the sheets. I mean, this is another example of what I was saying where they sprinkle humor throughout this.
Great, isn't it?
It's so good. This is one of... You know, my problems with The Handmaid's Tale, not to get too much into it. I know that it's a very dark show, but I felt like
it
could have used a little bit of humor throughout. It's a great show, but, you know, even in these dark days of America, we're finding humor wherever we can.
Well, Littlefinger, let's give him a bone. I mean, he does get the mic dropped on him.
He really does.
He goes up to her and he goes, you know, what? You aren't happy. He can tell she isn't happy, and that is true. And in what could drive a wedge further between Jon and Sansa is when he said, oh, I should listen to you, and she isn't happy. What's it going to take to make her happy?
Baelish?
Baelish dead or everybody dead? Or what's it going to take?
Well, that is a great question. I mean, at this point, she is still there for Jon. And as I said, they make... This is another beautiful scene because in such a short period of time, they make it very clear. Sansa knows what the deal is.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? So she is never going to trust Baelish.
How about a little bit of trust?
No, not even a little bit.
What about, hey?
She knows what he wants. She shuts him down. I don't need to hear anymore. You don't need, I love it when she says, you don't need to have the final words. It's so good. And then he opens his mouth. She's like,
I love it. Hardcore Sansa. Hardcore. Love it. All right, so Catfish, we have one last location. And it kind of took up the middle of the episode, but I really liked it. For all the money on this show, they can't do CG ships too well. But before we get to CG ships, we had a question all the off season. How is Jaime going to react to Cersei having done this? And the show kind of tries to explain, yes, some time has passed, but Cersei says, you've been quiet, a.k.a. we're finally having the discussion we should have had immediately. We're having it now in the next season.
We promised not to discuss this until the show started up again.
Right. If you're Jamie, don't you kind of think to yourself, why? You know, what's the point of ruling if we have nothing? When he cocks his eyebrow to the dynasty for a thousand years for us.
Yeah, he's like, are we going to last that long? I mean, I've already lost one part of my body. I don't know. Things might eventually start falling off. One thing that's made clear here, though, is that Cersei does not forget things. And
she's
also very tricky with her words. In the same two-minute period, she blames both Tyrion and Sansa for killing Joffrey.
Right. Yeah. Well, it would take a village.
It would take a village.
So but she hates her brother. She has good spies, or I should say Qyburn must have good spies, because he knows evil Uncle Tyrion is the Hand of the Queen.
Right.
And she hates Tyrion. She hates Tyrion. But
well, as well you should, even if you're an evil person. I mean, you think that he killed your son.
Right.
And then you think that he killed Tywin. Now, She's only right about one of those things, but even one of those things is enough.
Yeah,
and Jamie is the admitted person who let him go. So Jamie is responsible for the death of their father, who knew a lot of shit.
Oh, yeah. I love how Cersei walks around her newly done floors. You know, everything makes me think of House Hunters here in this episode. Look at these floors I got done.
They're so beautiful. However, it's almost like, however, when they're doing when they're starting one of those shows, when they're starting one of those home makeover shows, and they dig up the carpet and like, uh-oh, we've got a problem in the floor over here.
Right.
Uh-oh, we got a problem in the floor over here. They're essentially they're in the middle of a good, they've got a good wood where they are, and they're surrounded by rot on all sides.
So she goes down to Dorne and she talks about Ilaria Sand and her, quote, brood of bitches. Whoa, that is that's one way to call the Sand Snakes. Then when she goes to talk about Lady Olenna, and what was the phrasing she uses
harsh
here?
Words.
Oh, my God. Here we go. She says, the old C word. Oh,
yeah.
She and the Hound.
She and the Hound would love. They have a great time.
Right. Now, Jamie, one of the things he pitches is he's like, winter's here. We got to have food. You know, we got to feed ourselves. And so he pitches Highgarden, like, hey, why don't we go? Now, Highgarden is where Lady Olenna Tyrell is. He's like, hey, why don't we go there and get some stuff? You know, we got to feed our men, feed our horses. The Tyrells have all the food. They have all the livestock.
And pretty much they've laid waste to the Tyrell Highborn family.
Right. And so he makes a good point there. Hey, let's go get some stuff. But he also keeps making a good point, and probably a point that he shouldn't be making if he wants to be with Cersei. We need allies. What about the allies? Have you mentioned the allies? Don't you think we need allies? And that, of course, pushes her to, quote-unquote, the only ally left on the board in those unbelievable ships.
And our boy, Euron.
Euron.
We got to see him a little bit last year.
Yeah, two episodes. That's all we've seen him ever.
But we didn't get to see him the way he is in this episode.
Oh, man.
I mean, he is so gangster. He's bringing it. He knows what he's got. He knows what he's got his eye on. And I love the interplay between him and Jaime. Now, Jaime gets in a little slur about the Ironborn who haven't done anything and don't have anything. But Euron returns the favor double-handedly. First, he uses the term two good hands.
Right. Oh, so good.
And then when Cersei gives him a hard time for murdering his brother, Euron says, it's not bad. You should try it.
I know. And what do you think about Euron? We really, like you said, we haven't gotten to know him. And this, he's got a new outfit now that he's calling himself Gig. He's kind of rocking the unbuttoned look, the unzipped up look.
He is so gangster here. I mean,
I know.
Even look at his posture, right? He's like, he just kind of like slumped
laid
shoulder.
Back.
He is laid back with his mind on his money and his money on his mind.
Now, Euron is pretty smart, but when he sees the mountain kind of take that step towards him, he knows what time it is. You know what I mean? He's like, let's move back. And we get some great history between them. Because Euron's only been on two episodes of the show, they go back to the smack talk, talks about the Greyjoy Rebellion. So just for so we're all on the same page. According to the show's timeline, 9 years before the show began, Robert had been king for a while, but the Iron Islands and the Greyjoys decide to rise up in rebellion against usurper King Robert. And apparently it was Euron's plan to go burn all the fleet in Lannisport, a.k.a. the place near Casterly Rock that is the Lannisters' home, and got it started off. And Jaime's talking trash about, hey, man, I came back and I kicked all your people. And Euron, that's probably the only best comeback for, hey, you killed a bunch of my people? It was overcrowded.
Also, though, I mean, Jamie's great. It's hard to mock somebody when you go, man, I killed a bunch of people. And then the person goes, yeah, that was pretty awesome. I like that.
Right, yeah.
And Jamie's like, wait, well, hold on. Those are your people. He's like, yeah, but it was cool. Hey, it's really hard to slam somebody like that.
Now, I love that Euron calls himself Captain of the Great 14 Seas.
He's the greatest captain of the 14 Seas.
Yeah, I have to be honest. I know the Jade Sea, the Emerald Sea, the Narrow Sea, the Shivering Sea,
Look, they're ironborn. They know more seas than you. He'll just make it up.
Summer Sea, right?
He'll make it up.
He named the amount that he could count.
He probably, the last time he went out to use latrine, when he was done, he looked down and he said, look, there's the Huron Sea. He just comes up with seas whenever he wants.
But he wants Cersei as his queen.
Now, this is smart because she knows that she needs him, but she plays a little hard to get here. Nuh-uh. I'm being your queen.
Right. Is Euron really smart? You see what Cersei did to her last husband. Where is the brilliance in, hey, let's be husband and wife? I got to be honest. Man, I like Euron, though. He didn't get to do much this year. He's got a new haircut, new wardrobe. I really do like him.
And maybe this comes across from the way he is, although it's hard because we haven't seen him before, so we can just assume this is sort of his character. Let's face it. When we first met Theon was like this, too.
Oh, yeah, that's
so
a great
sort
point.
Of kind of a Greyjoy. I mean, when you first meet somebody and they're riding you back to your home on the horse and you try to get a little in, then that's something. But to me, and we talked about this in the pregame shows, I feel like I still need to see some of Cersei's power, like their army. It feels like they are in a situation where it is super desperate. And so for Euron, I'm not sure what's in it for him unless he gets to be king, because otherwise they need him more than he needs them. Right?
I would think so. Well, if everybody wants power, everybody wants to rule over everybody. And so right now, he can rule in the seas with his Iron Fleet that he's talking about. He can rule the Iron Islands, because the Lannisters certainly aren't powerful enough to get there and to put up, you know, to kick him out of the Iron Islands. The Lannisters, as one of my favorite cracks, you're talking about the humor in this episode, my favorite cracks is when she's like, yeah, we rule the Seven Kingdoms, and he's like, Jamie's like, maybe three, if we're being generous.
Right.
And I, to be honest, I can't figure out what three he would talk about. So theoretically, okay, Dorne is rebelled. That gets you down to six. Highgarden, not there. That gets you down to five. The North, that's gone. That gets you down to four.
Right. Well, he presumably just quelled the rebellion, and so that makes two. He just got back from kicking ass.
Yeah, but in the Riverlands. Riverlands isn't actually one of the Seven Kingdoms. It's just this other area. So the Vale of Arryn is not. The Stormlands, I think you could argue. I think that's where he's coming up with three. The Stormlands, which was House Baratheon, and now they're all dead. So theoretically, sure, you rule that. Yeah, okay.
Right.
And, you know, maybe he's trying to count the Vale of Arryn, because, I don't know, I can't think of the third he's pitching.
Maybe the third one is just this map.
Right. Listeners, if you could guess which of the three kingdoms Jamie was saying that they still rule. And, of course, there are tricky things. Like I said, the Riverlands and that area kind of around King's Landing is known as the Crownlands. But those aren't actually those aren't kingdoms, quote unquote. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if, you know, next week he's like, well, maybe we rule two. Okay, we're down to one. All right, Casterly Rock and anything outside. This bedroom, where we rule the bedroom.
Whatever you can hit with a rock. Catapult, sure. If you can use a catapult, but it has to be on the battlements.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, so we're into it, Catfish. We've only got six more episodes left in this season. Are you ready? This is going to be a wild ride.
Yeah, they have put everything into effect. And, you know, one of the things that I kept talking about, kept going over and over again, was that I thought that they were going to have to go and take care of business down south, that is Jon's army,
right,
before they take care of the White Walkers, simply because the White Walkers have always been the big bad. And maybe that's where I went wrong, but right now you see that that is a conversation. Some people think we still need to go down south and take care of them.
Oh, yeah.
And there's good points on both sides. One is, well, the Lannisters, they're too wimpy to take care of the cold.
Right.
But there is that wall for the White Walkers. So what do you think is going to happen? Who do you think they're actually going to fight first?
Well, let me say this is going to sound crazy. I guess I do have fear. I have fear about what Sansa was hinting at. If Jon and it makes sense for John. If his focus is totally north, and if people don't like trailers, I'm going to mention one thing from the trailer. You saw John kind of north. It looked like he was north. It looked like he was going to fight north. And so if John does that, who's to say Cersei doesn't do some stealth thing, send somebody up, and they kill Sansa? Like, Cersei wants her revenge for Joffrey.
Right.
Like, what if, you know, because they take their eyes off the south, Cersei, who theoretically can't march her army into the north, can't defeat the north in any traditional means, can she go low enough to do it? I'll throw that out as a possibility.
I mean, the one thing is we see the difference between people who have seen the White Walkers and the people who haven't.
Right.
It's just like if somebody had seen an alien and you haven't and you just don't believe in it.
Right.
The White Walkers are an existential threat to the entire human race.
Oh, yeah.
So, of course, you'd want to kill them first. But, like John says, the first they need to get the dang weapons. It doesn't make any sense to go up against them with, you know, with sticks and stones. They need that dragon glass. So I'll be interested to see how soon that information gets to John. And then that could put into motion, okay, there are people there already where the dragon glass is.
Right.
So how does that work out?
And who's can fit in little caves?
Well, we know that two people can. One of them is Tyrion.
Right.
And the other one is Tiny Jon Snow. who is about an inch or so shorter than Sansa.
Hey, now. Listeners, that's going to wrap it up for episode 1 of season 7, Dragonstone. So great. So exciting. I'm at 8, and I could see all the episodes just getting better and better and better. And I'm going to have a hard time finding ratings that could go higher than 8.
I don't know. It's interesting because I think we always are so positive at the beginning of the season because they're covering everything. And then what happens is we get sad because we want to see everything covered, and they kind of break it into bits.
Oh, yeah.
But so we'll see. This is usually what happens. We start off strong, and then it kind of goes down, and then it comes back up again. It's sort of a natural – when you're reacting right away rather than sitting and – waiting a week or even watching the entire series, that can seem to happen. But we would be remiss if we ended this podcast without celebrating His Highness Joffrey by announcing our Joffreys of the Week. For those of you who are not our double L's. Loyal listeners.
Oh, yeah. We said that about an hour ago.
Yeah, we did. We started this podcast to honor Joffrey, who is clearly the greatest, most beneficent, smartest, kindest, best
monarch,
ruler,
the best monarch ever
in the history of the world, real or fictional. So every week we try to nominate somebody, real or fictional,
yep,
who can demonstrate at least one aspect of the greatness that is Joffrey. And so for this week,
yeah,
I'm doing something I've never done before.
Oh no, what?
I am going to nominate somebody in the show.
Somebody we just watched as our Joffrey of the Week. Okay, so let's hear it. Who do you have as your Joffrey?
And it is because this person is unrelenting.
Unrelenting.
And all powerful.
Oh, yeah.
And is actually Joffrey. I am nominating the Night's King as my Joffrey of the Week.
That is. He's got the best followers. And we have the best followers, too. You loyal listeners are great. So for everyone.
Hold on a second. Bubba,
yeah,
we would be even more remiss.
Extra remiss.
If our loyal listeners did not get to hear your always amazing, confounding, wondrous nomination for Joffrey of the Week. So, Bubba, who do you have?
Okay, so Catfish, name somebody who is in the seat of power and then disappears when everybody is counting on him. Joffrey. Joffrey was in King's Landing. Everybody counts on him. He disappears, fakes his death to catch real usurpers. The Republican Party was counting on somebody being in Washington to help them pass Trump Care, and John McCain pulled Joffrey and left.
Wow. Is this part of some Machiavellian plan, you think, just like Joffrey?
If let me say, McCain is taking down the healthcare they're drafting, I'd be very happy with that. So that's how about that? A very odd, completely, you would almost believe that I thought of it just now.
almost. But, you know, like Joffrey,
yeah,
sometimes John McCain can seem kind of capricious.
Oh, yeah.
But Joffrey is never. He just seems capricious. John McCain, it's up for debate right now.
That's true.
But all you have to do is exhibit one aspect, and John McCain sure did it for a last-minute suggestion. Right. So, listeners,
right. And let me say, I like monarchs who haven't been captured.
All right,
sorry. All right. So, who is our winner, Catfish? Who is our winner again?
Oh, our winner again was at Leann_R2, LYANN_R2. You can direct message us on Twitter, either Bubba, who's at Fit and Trim.
FITTENTRIM, at Fit and Trim on Twitter.
Or myself, Catfish, at CJGman67. Give us your address and we will send you this wonderful prize. And we will join you next week for episode 2 of Game of Thrones, which means episode 2 of The Joffrey of Podcasts. Cunt.